Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 767. This is Kevin DeFrango, freshly back from Las Vegas. Is Chris Calamita? What is up, good sir?
Oh, quite a bit, Kevin. Quite a bit. It was a hell of a trip. I'm definitely glad I went for many reasons that have nothing to do with professional wrestling. It was a great trip. Great time with some great people and drinking some great beer. But the professional wrestling experience is probably what we should kick us off with or get to for quickly for the sake of the audience.
I guess as someone who was not hearing any commentary and live in the booth, or live in the arena. I was too surprised that they actually went with Austin Theory. What was the vibe in the venue when ended up being the choice?
It wasn't good. It was... On Twitter, I made sure to share the... Because Steve and Kelly were there.
Yes.
I made sure to go into my photo library and bring out that photo of him. This is the only, maybe less than five or less people are going to get this. Of him flicking his lighter in reference to the all-in Marty Skrull fiasco.
Oh. Yeah.
It was not a good vibe at all. Plenty of bullshit chants. I mean, because they sent Pierce out there to build this up and make you believe, for example, John fucking Cena's showing up. I mean, that's the way he was talking. If they wanted this whole thing to be a whole, you know, obvious bullshit thing, Vince should have gone out there himself and done it. But making Adam Pierce go out there and so enthusiastically, like, who the hell directed Adam Pearce to be so enthusiastic in that announcement? He should have sounded like he had a gun to his head making that announcement.
Did he make that on the pre-show?
No, it was right at the last minute.
Just the introduction of Theory.
Yeah.
You're talking. Oh. I guess I never got the vibe that it was John Cena.
Whatever. You didn't think it was going to be Theory. You didn't think it was going to be this complete bullshit thing of someone you're not going to be happy to see.
No. I did not think that was what was up their sleeve, that's for sure. But as soon as it, I'll admit, as soon as it did happen, I'm like, oh my god, this is how they're, I feel like we talked about it, that it seemed like the WWE had painted themselves into a weird corner with the Bobby Lashley versus Austin Theory matchup.
Yeah.
To me, this is their way of getting out of it. Do I like that? Not even a little bit.
Being there live, there were some good spots in the men's Money in the Bank match, but I could not shake the cloud over my head that they wouldn't put him in this match if he wasn't winning it.
Oh.
Yeah. It was just not a good vibe at all. Not a good ending. The whole experience, the show was pretty good. Honestly, maybe it was one of the lower-end pay-per-views of the year across both major companies, but there have been some really strong pay-per-views this year, so it wasn't that bad, or wasn't really bad at all.
I'd definitely say that the ending maybe made things a little worse than they really were. I'm trying to think if it was the women's ladder match led everything off,
and that hit it was great. I know there have been some complaints about some botches and some people being really, really harsh about Shotzi that completely undeserved, and it seems like she's taking it pretty hard, and that's bullshit, and I fuck all those people. But yeah, no, that match started us off really hot, and it was such a hot start, you struggle to follow it.
that really might have been their biggest problem, is that it really did probably start off with the best match of the night. Which also, ended up leading to, would you say, the biggest moment of the night with Liv Morgan cashing it in.
That was tremendous. If the show had ended right there, I think everyone would have gone home happy. Just an incredible moment. Just the roar of the crowd, the feeling that obviously she's going to cash in, and she's going to win it, and she does, and the crowd goes crazy again. She's incredibly emotional. You deserve a chance. One of the times they are completely deserved and right to, and rightful.
Right. Yeah, that does get said frequently. So, yeah, it. I was a little bit surprised. Especially, it's funny, I power watched SmackDown before doing the show here, and would I have been ticked had I bought a ticket for that SmackDown. On top of that, should I have made a pick after SmackDown? The fact that Liv Morgan had the winning pinfall for her team on that show, I would not have picked her to come out of the women's match with the championship after that. Or with the, I shouldn't say championship, because you do officially need to win it. And yeah, I was a little bit surprised she ended up with the contract, honestly. Well, in hindsight, I suppose. But yeah, it's a fun choice, and it'll be interesting to see how much they run with her. I feel there are already the... this isn't going to be a long title reign rumors out there. I mean, she's barely won that championship, and I feel like I'm already seeing she's going to lose that championship rumors.
Yeah. If Ronda goes killer heel after this, and they do that match at SummerSlam, I don't know if... I don't know if they're going to have Liv retained. If, say, Bayley were to return and immediately get put in the SummerSlam title match against Liv Morgan, I'm not sure if Liv Morgan's retaining that title. It'll be interesting. It will be interesting. Because I do think they have something with her. And I think that she should run with it. And not lose it back to somebody who's held it a bunch of times and has dominated the division for years. We need some new we need new blood in these women's divisions, and yes, Liv's been there a while too, but not in this role. She worked her way up from a women's tag team scene when there wasn't a women's tag team scene, really.
Yeah,
the Riot Squad was it. They were the women's tag team scene.
Yes,
and. Yeah, then she's had her whole last year where she has been the bridesmaid in the bridesmaid role, getting oh so close, but being turned away every time. She wins the Money in the Bank. She cashes in that night. She wins. She's the women's champion. This should not be turned into a Nikki Ash situation or any other cash-in, turn-quick failure. They should try to build the SmackDown Women's Division around Liv Morgan for a while, at least.
Yeah, that was the thing that I found the strangest about those rumors. Because I'm with you, like, they need people. I feel like it's, you know, again, now that you've got to think to yourself that, you know, Charlotte Flair has been out for a while now. Becky Lynch was out for a while. And I mean, I know that there are different reasons why these performers were out. And we're still missing Sasha and Naomi.
Yes.
I would hope that it would dawn on them at some point that they are in a real problem spot for talent and for upper and for upper talent, because they haven't really. Yeah, Bianca Belair, I guess we've talked about it some. Bianca Belair is the most recent person to get a pull up to the main, you know, the main event level. And without a title defense, at least, you have a hard time selling me on Liv Morgan, because I guess the other reason why I probably would have put her odds a little bit lower than some of the other women in there that we talked about last week, her push has been really uneven. She's gotten one and then they pulled back. She's gotten one, you think she's going to win it, and then they pull it back again. So it's been really strange. And then for her, I mean, she got a little more of a warm-up again coming into Money in the Bank, I felt like. But there's only so much build you can do in, like, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, no, there isn't. But they've got the whole last year of her trying to beat Becky and getting so close. You know, she got an Elimination Chamber and got so close. Her and Rio got together as a tag team, and gosh darn it, they got so close. And then Rhea turns on her, and all they've done stuff with her. They've built up a sympathy with her. The crowd definitely identifies with her. She has a connection with the crowd, despite all of the booking, all the creative, you know, missteps, but. You know, giving her something and then taking it away. Giving her something and then taking it away. You know, the audience, the crowd has stayed with her. And
no.
For a while, it did seem like she was more of an internet sensation, and that did not necessarily transfer over to the live crowds. But over the last 6 months, especially after everything she was doing with Becky, the live crowds got really, really with her.
Oh, yeah, she has definitely gotten more crowd support as this thing has moved along. And that's a good thing. Like, again, the WWE needs that. And they should really ride that at least for a little bit here moving forward, I would think. Who knows if they will.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I know that there was people saying that if Ronda never came back, it would have been Charlotte versus Sasha at WrestleMania, and it likely would have been.
Oh.
They've been doing that match for 6 years. I know everyone loves Sasha. I love Sasha. But come on. This division needs new blood.
Oh.
And it needs it quicker than any other division in WWE. Especially on the SmackDown side.
Yeah, and I guess that is one of the interesting things that I feel like they mentioned it, but they didn't go too big on it. If I'm not mistaken, Liv Morgan is a Raw talent. Correct?
She is, was, at least.
Or was. Possibly. So, yeah, the women's division did need some help over there, one way or the other. And
We're seeing a lot more crossover, too.
Yes.
Why was Gunther on Raw? Yeah, we're tearing the walls down again.
Yes. Yeah, I guess I'm not surprised, especially after kind of power watching that SmackDown. I'm not surprised that is a general whole not to get into, because I'm assuming you never watched SmackDown.
I never watched SmackDown. No, today I was just finally able to catch up on Blood and Guts, and then the Battle Royal thing from Rampage. That's the wrestling I missed from last week that I've caught up on.
Okay. Well, just in general, I wasn't surprised that they did less wrestling on the show, and it was a lot of video packages and a lot of talk because they had matches the next, you know, like almost everyone that was there had matches the next night. And I do think that's a little bit of a downside to having the Saturday pay-per-views, that SmackDown always feels adjusted on those nights to compensate for the fact that, you know, all the big names are going to be on the card the next day. Like, you can only run them out there in either Battle Royal way or a large tag team or a tag team kind of format situation. And I do think that the weekly show hurts a little bit because of that.
Yeah, it does. But I still prefer Saturday pay-per-views. I don't even have a 9-to-5 to get to Monday morning. It just feels better to do these things on Saturday.
I guess it really is kind of immaterial to me, since I'm generally home at night. I prefer the day drinking these days. So, you know, I guess Saturday or Sunday doesn't really bother me. This weekend it was kind of nice because we just didn't have anything planned on Saturday. So we just kind of watched the pay-per-view. And I mean, hey, even the wife did enjoy the pay-per-view itself. I don't think she made it to the men's match, and she definitely would not necessarily get the dislike for Theory stuff. it might have been a quiet pay-per-view, I guess, but I'll tell you what, things did better than I expected. Leading up to Liv Morgan winning the championship, I felt like I was going to be bored out of my mind watching Ronda and Natalia. And they came up with a really good...
Go ahead.
No, you didn't like the match? I take it.
I was bored as hell watching. This was the most boring matches I've seen in a long time. I hated this match. I understand what they were doing. After everything, after the chaos of the Women's Money in the Bank, and Usos and the Street Profits doing every move under the sun in their match, I get what they were doing about slowing it down and having a scientific submission wrestling match. I get it. It was just not fun to watch at that point in the night.
It was a little late on the card, because that was, for lack of a better term, the co-main event, correct?
I would call it that. It just
well, no, just within the... It was on just before the men's match.
Yes. Yes,
I guess
it was. Yes.
That
before the men's match. Yes, it was.
That's okay, all.
We understand everything that they were doing, and hurting Rousey's knee so that Liv Morgan knew that this was her chance. No, I get everything they were doing. and it paid off, and it paid off beautifully. But no, this match wasn't particularly entertaining to watch.
Yeah, and I guess I did forget that I did not take the time back to watch Bianca versus Carmella, because I decided to take a shower during that match.
Did not miss much. It was what you expect from Bianca and Carmella. Except I have no idea why Carmella got to jump Bianca after the match and leave her laying. And then the next night at Raw during the tag match, Carmella is not beaten. She's left on her feet. She essentially gets the last laugh on Bianca running her into the ring post. I have no idea why they need to do that match again. I don't get it. It's just not a compelling match, and it never will be.
Oh,
and I like Carmella, but I will never buy that she has any chance at all to beat Bianca Belair. It sucks. It kind of sucks that I feel that way, and a lot of people feel that way. And I understand if Carmella legitimately gets her feelings hurt by that, but there's just something about the two of them that, whether it's the physical size difference, whether it's just how each of them is presented, their gimmicks, everything, nothing about Carmella makes me think that she could ever beat Bianca Belair.
Yeah, I mean, that, I feel like we talked about it last week, but I'm still in a, I'm still there. Like, it, they just have not sold her well for a couple of years now at this point. Yeah. Like, she had, Carmella has all the accolades, and I feel like if someone feels like looking in the archives, like, I feel like I was pretty early on, like, into Carmella's first championship reign after her Money in the Bank win. I was, like, I remember thinking to myself, like, I was like a month there, it was like a month in, and going, she's actually kind of starting to get good at wrestling here now. And something's been lost between then and now. And I don't know how you recover that necessarily. Like, that's a lot of mojo to recover.
Yeah, you're right. She did a lot of comedy after that. I mean, I love her with Truth. That was great stuff. And then she kind of did get lost during the pandemic era. I mean, she did get to come back with the Most Beautiful Woman in WWE gimmick and played that up and got her teamed with Zelina and were tag team champions and all that. But once again, no, it just. Just with her and Bianca, it just doesn't work. And I don't know when they're going to... Hopefully they just blow this off on Raw upcoming. They're going to do another match between them. So that Bianca's real opponent at SummerSlam is good. can come into the picture.
Oh, yeah, so weird. Yeah, I don't... Yeah. It was a weird choice to keep this feud going, because what, even when she did come back with the mask and everything, Bianca beat her in that time frame and now has beaten her again, and they're still going to give her another, like, even if it's a TV match, it still just feels like too much.
It is too much. There was, the only reason to do it was to give people that moment where, oh my God, is Liv coming out right now? And she didn't.
No.
And now you've still got to go through with Bianca getting her completely unnecessary revenge on Carmella for hitting her from behind and giving her a few stops.
Yeah, that is the other thing. It's not even like it was that much of a beatdown.
No.
It's really strange. If it were more of a beatdown than that, like if she really assaulted her, or even if they had to shelf her for a week or two, something like that. You know, maybe you can sell that Carmella did enough injury to Bianca to, you know, understand her, Bianca just giving her an extra match. Yeah, they didn't do that though. They did not do that. So, oof, another week of that at least. I guess I did like, we haven't talked about it yet. Usos versus Street Profits. How was
This
that
match,
live?
it's live. It started slow. And it was a long match. Then, of course, in about the last 5, 10 minutes, it picked up insanely. They did everything under the sun. It was basically, I know some people are going to hate me for saying this, the people who love the Usos so much. It became a Young Bucks match. To some degree, it became a Young Bucks match.
There were a lot of super kicks involved.
A lot of super kicks, a lot of big moves, a lot of big moves being kicked out of to a ridiculous degree. But once again, by the end, incredibly entertaining match. Excellent match. I don't know if I would call it, put it in any kind of match of the year. I'm not sure how if I feel that strongly for it, but it
Right.
got really, 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 really good at the end.
Yeah, I did like this match a whole lot. I can definitely get on board with the just the number of super kicks that got thrown. I'm like, guys, like, come on now. This is getting a little too reminiscent here. Even if they ended up fitting with the offense that the Street Profits were throwing at them, it seemed a little strange to be throwing that many super kicks. And one of the other reasons I think I liked it, it's something that I feel like I talk about regularly. The WWE doesn't do that type of stuff that often, that type of match, especially in the, well, A, there is still tag team structure within the match itself. So I'll always give that to the WWE.
Yeah,
But
definitely.
I'm still with you. Like it definitely had more of a vibe of like a big spot match. And because the WWE doesn't do the big spot fest type of matches, it felt different for the pay-per-view. And they did kind of slot it pretty well with the Ronda
They slotted it
match.
well. And honestly, I probably would have liked this match better if they just went all the way with it.
Oh.
Cut it. And it was just all big spots, basically. Cut out that first 10, 15 minutes of just of mat work, of wearing down, of the traditional beat down, and I think they did it like two or I think 2 or 3 times they had Montez and Angelo beating them down, and then they made a tag. There were about 2 or 3 hot tags in this match.
Yeah, there were a lot of hot tags.
After an extended beatdown, they got rid of that kind of stuff. Cut a lot of that out. Took this match down about 10 minutes. I'm sitting here calling it a match of the year because the last 10 minutes was that exciting. But it just took a long time to get there,
Yeah,
and
it
I gotta say that I this arena sucked.
Oh.
Have you ever been in the Grand Garden Arena?
I have not because when I was in Vegas there, I Yeah, I did not go to any of the arenas, and Impact was just running one of the casinos.
Right, yeah.
So no arena experience for yours truly. And how what was the size of that venue?
It's your average size. It's about it could fit about 12,000 to 15,000 people.
Oh.
12,000 with WWE stage sets. They only was sold out. about 5,000 people got just got their refunds and no chance to get back in. But yeah, no, I mean it was a good crowd for wrestling in that building, but it's just not a great building for amenities. The seats were the hardest. They were just these plastic, pull down seats. I've sat on aluminum bleachers. I've sat on wooden benches. Nothing was more uncomfortable for 3 hours for over 3 hours than these plastic seats. It was a terrible experience. So if in some ways people were getting antsy during different parts of the show, it's because they were promised a world-class, brand-new stadium experience, and they got this. So a lot of people, I think, were still in a really poor mood about how this all turned out.
Well, and you would know the difference in seats, honestly, because you sat in those very seats just la it was last year, right?
Oh, I sat in this one of the most comfortable seats I've ever sat in my entire life in that club section. Oh. Take me back to that. Take me back to that.
And I
And
was
they're supposed
I guess that's one where I am not surprised that things were like it just seemed when they mentioned the name, I was just like, this feels like a second-rate arena because it wasn't T-Mobile since the UFC was there, correct? And Thomas and Mack Center would just be over on UNLV's campus. Like, to me, that would
Yeah.
be the number two venue to go to.
I think they still wanted to keep to be on the strip. I don't know what's going on with Thomas and Mac,
Oh.
but I've never been in that one. Don't know if I want to either. I don't think I'm never coming back to anything at MGM Grand Garden or ever again. And if anything's being held at Thomas and Mac, I probably ain't doing it either. If it ain't the stadium, I guess I'll accept T-Mobile. That place looks nice, it's pretty new.
Yeah, I did go into their gift shop at T-Mobile Arena. I did not wander around the arena. It does look pretty nice from the outside. Kudos to the architect on that one. Anywho, yeah, I'm not completely surprised the venue was maybe not the best. Like, 'cause how many weeks out did they cancel that? Was it less than a month?
It was 5 or 6 weeks.
Five, okay.
It was about 5 weeks, I think.
That's still not usually a good time frame to try and get a large scale venue for, though.
No. They were lucky they got this. I mean, Joe Rogan was doing his stand-up at the Grand Garden Arena the night before, so they didn't really have probably the usual amount of time they have to get in and set up. They had less than 24 hours.
Oh.
They had significantly less than 24 hours because Joe Rogan would have done gone at night, and
Yeah.
they have to start wrestling has to start at 5 p.m. for an 8 p.m. TV time. So no, yeah. So yeah, no. They had to scramble for this one, and I still think that maybe they should have, still given the old college try with Allegiant. In that time period, it's Vegas. At the end of the day, just start passing tickets out to people.
Oh, I would
Count the shit out of
imagine.
it.
Yeah, I would imagine you could have papered that place, and things would have been okay.
Yeah, so I think they should have kept it. I think that contributed to maybe various points of the night, the live experience not being that great, because people were already, were still upset about what this turned into, moving to the smaller, crappier building. The original poster had Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns on it.
What? Just because neither of them was on the show, there's a big problem with that?
Yeah, when they're originally on the original poster that came out from Stadia.
Oh, man. That, yeah.
I mean, you felt that, you know, once again, they started announcing matches for SummerSlam before we got the Money in the Bank. What is this? What is this, Elimination Chamber? Fast Lane?
Oh, man.
You could tell they gave up on this show to a degree, and it was felt.
Gotcha. Yeah, they did not put themselves in a good position, honestly, to succeed there. And I guess maybe a general question, do you think that Money in the Bank is big enough to try and get that type of venue to start with? Like,
no, it probably was not. No, that right there. If they were going to do it anywhere, with Vegas, because once again, just as I said, start comping people on the Strip, walking on the Strip, or even on Fremont Street, but not, no, nowhere else. This was not a good idea. Look at everything they had going against it. SummerSlam's at a stadium 4 weeks later in Nashville.
No.
AEW was in Vegas just 5 weeks earlier. And none of our people traveled to that show. Basically, if you do a big thing in Vegas, it's going to be mostly travel.
Oh.
WrestleMania did two nights, 60,000 people each. So a lot of people have already done their wrestling-based vacation for the... A lot of people probably don't, if they're married especially, probably don't get to base one more than one vacation a year off of watching live wrestling.
I will say that maybe a smaller venue can be talked about as in local indie wrestling. An actual vacation is a separate matter and will pretty much be a one-off on this side of the microphone.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it was just... WWE will may need to reevaluate some of their future stadium plans. I mean, they're going for more SummerSlam. It's pretty much too late there. We'll see what that turns out, because that's an outdoor stadium.
Yes.
And it's still gonna be pretty light out. It's harder to hide if there are about 30,000-40,000 empty seats in that building.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Because they definitely have mentioned Nissan Stadium. I feel like the last time it was talked about, at least to my ears, the tickets were still in the 20s somewhere.
Yeah, tickets are in the 20s, and there's been a lot of things in the local press about the building's a shithole, and the Titans might be threatening to leave if they don't get a new stadium and all that. It's just like, we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're gonna throw a lot of shit at this stadium show.
That's kind of interesting. I haven't heard that about the stadium. B, I'm not completely surprised. It's got to be one of the older stadiums now. Like, I feel like they built that when the Titans went to Tennessee, and that's been kind of a long time ago at this point. I'm kind of interested in looking that factoid up.
Yeah.
Honestly. Because, yeah, I mean, most of the stadiums are new. I'm not surprised if maybe they're looking for a new stadium, really.
Yeah. Well, then we'll see what happens with WWE and SummerSlam and this stadium. Now that they've got Roman and Brock announced, now that, you know, McAfee's wrestling, Logan Paul's going to be wrestling, Jerry's still on John Cena wrestling. The thing about Nashville that makes it a good location is, number one, that area doesn't usually get big shows. The whole Southeast doesn't, other than maybe Atlanta, and if you count Florida, it doesn't get big shows.
Oh.
And Nashville is very easily drivable from a lot of other southern cities. I know Steve and Kelly are driving in from Louisville for it. Steve has no intention of getting a hotel. He's just going to drive out that same night. He doesn't care if he gets up at 3, 4 in the back of the morning.
Ugh, gross.
And there's a lot of people who will make that, who will get in their vehicles, and they'll make that kind of a drive. They'll make a 4-hour drive.
Yeah, it was certainly on the radar. It's drivable from Columbus here. But definitely hotel involved.
I mean, it's yeah. I've never been to Nashville, so I'd want to make a whole trip out of it.
Yeah, and it is a good place to hang out. Like, we did get to hang out with Jeremy there previously, so I wouldn't mind doing more exploring down there. And the stadium was built, or first game in the stadium was 99.
Yeah, it's getting a little old, especially compared to the other stadiums throughout the NFL and in the States. Yeah.
Yeah, and if nothing else, like, I know that even places, Heinz Field is not exactly new at this juncture, but it's also received at least 2 or 3 facelifts in the meantime.
Yeah.
To renovate the more modern kind of things. And if they haven't done that there at Nissan Stadium, it could be a problem with the venue. Like, you need to, if you want to keep it at least closer to state of the art, you've still got to sink some money into that puppy. It's going to be, but I guess that's to round back to Money in the Bank. It does feel like it's too close together. Like, it's one thing running a stadium show overseas, like they're going to do in Cardiff. Mm-hmm. Because you've got a completely different audience there, essentially, you know, to want to come to this thing. Like, it's going to be a lot easier for some people to travel to that than... even as many English fans as we saw at any WrestleMania, and that was a lot, I would imagine it'd still be easier for more English fans to go to a show in England itself.
Yeah, I imagine they'll be coming from all over there. Yeah, it'll be England, Ireland, you know, Germany. They'll get a good crowd there. Absolutely.
Yeah. So
we have.
Yeah, there's kind of differences in what the WWE is looking at stadium wise. Like, I think that there is a little burnout, at least within the United States. Like, I'm not sure if you can do WrestleMania for 2 nights and then 2 months later turn around and expect Money in the Bank to be a destination pay-per-view. Oh. Also,
I've got an update on SummerSlam tickets. They're at 28,243 tickets distributed.
Oof.
Sold so far for a capacity of 35,877. That's still, once again, it's outdoors. It's going to be daylight for the first hour or two of the pay-per-view. That's, how do you even hide that?
Everyone's in the lower bowl. That's at least one way to try and hide it. No matter where your tickets are.
But you can't have any wide shots at all on the other end of the field.
No.
You can't do anything.
No.
God, that's just not... why didn't they just go forward with Vegas? And if they're going to be happy with this.
I have no idea. No idea.
I guess Vegas was under 20. It only got about 17,000. So they've sold 11,000 more tickets than they had. But still, once again, outdoor stadium, summer, sunlight. God, how do you film that? I keep saying that. How do you shoot that?
You know what? Poorly. Just like everything else that WWE does. Poorly.
Yeah. Just like their production has been for the last 2 or 3 years. Poor. When it was the best production, live production in the world, and then Kevin Dunn took a bunch of Adderall and started demanding everyone shake their cameras.
Oh, well, between the camera shaking and I feel like there was one moment within the pay-per-view itself where they cut away from a big moment and just completely missed the other big moment that they were trying to cut to. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but it also feels like one of those things that consistently happens no matter when I'm watching the programming. So, yeah. Kevin Dunn's going to get out of there just about the same time that Vince McMahon does, which is pretty much never. Fallout. Is there much to be said about Raw? I'm kind of looking it over here. And we've kind of covered the Liv Morgan stuff. And I did take the time to actually listen to that promo. I actually kind of liked her ad-lib stuff that seemed more ad-lib or off the cuff when she was firing back at the other women than I did her actual promo. Yeah, it was good for her. She did at least she did get the pinfall there. So that was nice to see. Seth and Ezekiel is a whatever. The six-man tag was whatever. I mean, I guess I'm glad we got someone barfing up hot dogs? Question mark.
Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, you need that. You need
that
in the 4th of July, of course.
Yeah, we needed some wacky skit, and we got it.
Yeah, that's all fun.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier. They do really seem to be all in on Gunther here.
They are. I mean, she just got to destroy R-Truth while he's dressed like Uncle Sam on the 4th of July. So I don't know if this is the start of them really going anti-American with old Gunther. But if he is, there's a man who's played a Marine in a movie who might have an answer for him. And I'm not talking about The Miz or Ted DiBiase Jr.
Oh man, Ted DiBiase Jr. makes his long-awaited comeback.
No, that was interesting. I mean, they've established that John Cena and R-Truth are friends on camera.
Oh,
so they have Gunther destroy him. You know, maybe they are going in that direction. We'll see. We've got 4 weeks till SummerSlam. Oh, excuse me, we got 3.5 weeks until SummerSlam. So we'll see if they go in that direction.
And then it was the main event here. I suppose it needs to be talked about. Becky Lynch gets a big win in a no holds barred match against Asuka. What do you think about this outcome after weeks and weeks of torment from Asuka? Becky Lynch finally gets one over on her.
I think it needed to be done. Nah, I mean, some people were thinking that Becky's downfall needed to keep going and going and going. I disagree. It's time for her to get some wins and get back into contention for the women's title.
No.
Yeah, I imagine Becky versus Bianca is a very good chance that they'll run with that at SummerSlam.
Oh. Yeah, it would make sense to have a three-peat at a big outdoor venue to try and do something here to pop the people. So yeah, Becky versus Bianca 3, that could work out pretty well. Anything else to talk about within the WWE that was not covered yet?
I think we're good there.
I'll admit, I don't think I watched Rampage this week.
I only saw the two ring battle royal deal that they did. It was an interesting concept, trying to do a Royal Rumble style entries with two rings and 10 guys in each ring.
Oh, is that what the blue and the red thing was for? I guess I did watch that.
I don't remember the blue and red thing.
I feel like they were announcing which ring you were supposed to go to. And it was blue ring or red ring. Because it's they were saying blue 8 or red, red 8. I forget which order they were going in, but that's how they were designating who was going to which ring.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was an interesting concept. Brody King going over and getting a interim championship match against Moxley on Dynamite. That could be a fun match. I got nothing against it. For a title match on Dynamite.
Yeah, kind of seems like the perfect opponent for that kind of a situation. Brody King isn't going to be in the main event anytime soon, so if they end up meeting again, you get a little bit of history, and you can still play up the size disparity as things are. I guess I did forget that I did watch that. But hell, I must have. Oh, that's probably why. I actually watched that on Friday night, and that feels like forever ago right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One thing that we do normally talk about at the end of these very podcasts are some Belltime beers. I will let you. You know what? I'll talk about it first here because I know that you actually got to drink Las Vegas beer. I, on the other hand, did not. The time that I went out there for Impact, let's just say that my father-in-law had an impact with his face on a rock. When we were out on a hike. That caused us to take him to an ER. In that case, we were then at the ER for a good chunk of the day, and Kevin did not get to go brewery hopping like he had intended to. Good news on that front, we got to go to a cheesesteak place that was on Triple D, and it was quite delicious. And we would not have gone to that had we not been in that part of... outside of Las Vegas, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know where it was. I don't know if it was actually Henderson or whatnot, but we went out to the one part. So I did get to try, I think it's just Las Vegas Brewing Company, because they were in one of the, casinos on the Strip. But I did not really get to go around trying stuff. What all places did you end up hitting there?
We hit, the entire easy-to-get-to, all on one street, Brewery Row. We had six. That's in the Arts District. If you're, I don't know if you're familiar with it or
no. Heard of it. Yeah, not that I'm still, I guess I've only been there to Vegas once, and yeah, it was never one of those destinations for me that I really need to get here. I'm not a big gambler, and yeah, I guess I never really talked myself into it. So,
well, you should definitely do this. Do what a self-guided walking brewery tour through Brewery Row. That is definitely something that you would enjoy doing. Started at Abel Baker Brewing. Had a Calatron Girl Mango and an El Pato Loco Summer Edition. Pretty good beers to start. Kept it very light. Very light. You know, to start, I did not want to get too happy or too dark, too early. So this was these were good Hefeweizens, blonde ales, things of that sort. Were what I was hitting the early part.
Always a key to long day drinking. That is definitely a key for me. Drink low ABV beers if you know you're going to be out for a while.
Yes, that is exactly what I did. Yes, yes, yes.
So, yeah, anyone out there that has not done professional day drinking, that is always good advice for anyone out there. So what was the second place you ended up hitting?
Second place was Nevada Brew Works. Had their Hefeweizen wheat beer. Once again, keeping it light. Also ordered their wood fire pizzas. Would recommend especially for a day like that. Good stuff. Let's see. I know I had two beers there, but I didn't.
Oh, you don't have the second one.
I didn't check that one in on a good old
Untapped. Yeah,
Untapped.
Yeah, these things happen. I have so many beers sometimes that sometimes it does get forgotten. And yeah, Untapped just saves me from my trash memory. So, what was the next place that you ended up hitting then?
Next place would be a place called Huddle or HUDL. I went with there. I decided to go a little bit darker, just a little bit darker. I went with a vanilla oat cream ale.
Oh.
And then they had a vanilla oat chocolate cream ale.
Oh.
Those were mighty tasty. That was a good time. This one was a smaller place. You know, one of the types that just beer, no food or anything. Not a lot of frills that I remember, even on the walls or anything. Just a pretty, just a nice little place to drink.
Well, that's three and, so far, right? Then.
Yeah. Did I? Then we went to a place called Craft House Brewery. This is a strong German motif.
Yeah.
They included with a food menu that is very German sausage and German sausage heavy. And that one, I went a little off the beaten path with this one. They have what are called beer. I believe the term is beer-aritas.
Oh, yeah, those are pretty popular these days, especially at the German breweries. There's a Hauf-Brauhaus here in Columbus, and I know that it's a spinoff of the famous one in Germany. But they love their beer-aritas there also. I do think that the lighter German beers mix well with other things to come up with this cocktail. Which, do you know what the base beer was?
Let me see.
Because I'm assuming it was. A lot of the times it's the Hefe, honestly, because it does already have a little bit of banana and clove in it.
You know what? I'm pretty sure it was their Hefeweizen, yes. Yeah, yep. Mixed in with all the Rita-ness. That was mighty tasty.
The wife loves those. Around these parts.
Those will get you into big trouble. If you're not careful, those will get you into big trouble.
Oh man. Yeah, fair enough. What was up next? I know that you didn't keep track the last couple of breweries, but what were the last two places on Brewers Row?
The last one was Hot Nuts Brewing. And oh. I'm pretty sure that I had a stout or a porter there. I can look at their menu actually. Let's see what I had there. As long as that comes up. But regardless, in the last two places, you know, I definitely hit the darker beers pretty hard. Because by that point, I didn't care. No one was driving anywhere. Yeah, the last place is called Neon Desert Brewing. Once again, both of these, smaller places, no food, not a lot of frills. But good beer. They both had some pretty good seating. I will say that they. The Neon Desert was pretty basic. You know, high top tables. Hot Nuts. We got to sit in a pretty nice little area off the corner with, you know, comfortable booths. So Hot Nuts had that going for it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
No. I absolutely 100% recommend this to you. I mean, it's Las Vegas. I know that you say it's not, you're not a big gambler. There's so much more to do than gambling. You're a drinker. You're a foodie. Trust me. You can get out and explore and find some great stuff for you.
Yeah. There is a lot of. Trust me. There was. I started marking off the architecture venues when we went there the last time. So I always know how to get myself into something. It's just that my brewery day got wrecked. Like, it was specifically planned for that day. I was going to have about 6 to 8 hours to go out drinking. And then that all got wrecked.
We're gonna hit any of the ones I talked about.
To be honest with you, I'd have to pull. I don't know if I still have the list or not of venues that I was looking at. Because the one or two that I did hit ended up being ones that were just within the casinos themselves. So I can't remember where I was going because it might have crossed paths with my look at buildings list too. So sometimes that doesn't always lead you to some of the smaller Brewers Row type venues.
Right. One nice place to hit that does serve a lot of different beer though. It's outside of New York. It's called Beer House. Yeah, very nice location. Again, depending on how the weather is, but when you're outside, it can get a little hot. But you can just sit and drink. Also, another place that has the German motif going with a lot of sausage based menu items.
No,
that's definitely a place that my friends and I like to just sit around, watch. You're outside, so you can do your people watching. It's pretty fun.
And I know that you went to one of Gordon Ramsay's places there, and we did that when we were in Las Vegas too, and that was some damn tasty food.
It was the MKC food. It did the pub and grill, then end up doing Hell's Kitchen. Hell's Kitchen's pretty formal dress. I didn't want to bring pants or a nice shirt or even a just damn sure a coat or a change of, or a different pair of shoes.
Yeah, I was gonna say you don't need a coat because I think we ended up going to Hell's Kitchen because the in-laws are such big fans. Now that you mention that, yeah, because it's out in front of Caesar's Palace, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the Pub and Grill's in the front. I think Hell's Kitchen's downstairs in the shops. If I remember correctly.
Oh, okay. Then we might have just gone to the Pub and Grill. Then, because it was out front there of Caesar's.
On the top
floor.
Yeah,
we didn't go downstairs.
The Pub and Grill. Yeah, when you walk through the door, you can see it. Yeah, you can see the Gordon Ramsay sign. So that's probably the one you are thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a nice restaurant. I had the three-piece Wellington meal. Three course. Thank you for getting that word right.
Yep.
Three piece. Three-piece chicken tenders. The three course dinner. I liked it. It was really good. Definitely an experience to have it. But I think if I hit one of his places again, I'll probably spend about $20 less and just get the steak with one side.
Oh,
get the steak with the side and the dessert. Did not need this. Dessert was good too, but didn't need it.
Yeah, I can't remember what I had there. I'm sure I have pictures of it, but I think I just got the burger, honestly, and that was it was really good. From what I can remember, and we went at lunch too, which makes a difference. Going at lunch rather than dinner does make your menu choices at least a little bit different.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Cool. Belltime Beer on this end, Sonder Brewing. This is William Goat, their Bock beer, a multi-dark lager. And it's another German beer. So talking about dark beers, Bock beer is certainly on my list for... good to be consumed. It usually tends to be around March when they hit the Bock beers there in the Cincinnati area, because Sonder is from Mason, Ohio, just outside of Cincinnati. Then very German-heavy influence down in those parts also. That is the Belltime beer up on this end. You heard quite a few recommendations from at Stunt Cali on the other end. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.